Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
And Reverend Tara and Donna and everybody that's been working with me before I got here, I got to say, you all are living up to the reputation of being incredibly wonderful to work with. Yeah. It's been amazing. So thank you so much for being here and for being such a great support. Oh, thank you. See, that's what I'm talking about right there. So yeah, I can't really explain how excited I've been to come into this community, because this is one of the first centers that I really found out about when I was coming up through the movement. And I grew up in this teaching, and I always heard great things about this place and just how amazing it is to be in a place that, like, you really get the feeling that everybody has some ownership here, like that you're co-creating this space together. And I've just been following you a little bit and seeing the work that you're up to in the world, and I've just been so impressed. So when I was asked to speak today and kick off this month of the theme of I care for the poor, and I'm going to unpack that statement a little bit later in my talk, I was really excited to talk about the first week, which is compassion. And I added that word real compassion onto the front, because as I was doing some research and preparing for this talk, I began to realize and recognize that there's a lot of different understandings of what compassion actually is out there. And when I looked it up in the dictionary, the first definition that came up was sympathetic pity. And it was like, ugh, really? Like, if that's the case, like, I hope I never experience someone having compassion for me ever. Like, there's nothing like a little bit of pity to make me feel smaller than I actually am. That was my first short joke. Evan, who works here, I guess he was making a joke. He's like, I hope Masando can see above the podium. I got a good, I don't know. I mean, for you, those that are listening on the radio, I'm a Japanese guy, good looking, about 5'3¾". But, you know, you could see my head above this podium. But pity, you know, compassion is definitely not pity. So I don't care what Webster says. That definition didn't work for me, right? And compassion also isn't this thing that I know I can jump to and being a part of this teaching so long, just that loves positivity and just jumping to positivity when someone may be experiencing or sharing something with you that's difficult, right? And believe me, like I so believe in the power of positivity. But I think there's a line that we have to draw. If someone is coming up to you and they're like, man, I just found out that my mom died. And you're like, no negative vibes here. God, you're just being so negative. Can you please just focus on the positive? We're like, I found out I'm getting a divorce. And it's just like, you can't focus on that. Focus on the positive, right? And so it's definitely not that. It's like definitely not like painting a silver lining around a cloud that's like made of fart juice, you know? Like, we can't do that. That's not what compassion is, right? So what is compassion? When you look at the etymology, and I love etymology when, you know, it helps when you just break down words and you find out where the actual parts of the word came from. The etymology of compassion actually comes from the Latin pati, which means to feel deeply or to undergo an experience. And then that prefix co or com just means with, right? So it translates to feel deeply with, to undergo with, to experience with. And that's what compassion really is. It's to be in this resonance, to actually go through an experience with another person, to actually feel what they're feeling, right? To deeply feel what they're feeling, which I get can be a little intimidating. It's kind of like, nope, you have your thoughts and your experience. I have my thoughts and experience. Just keep those separate. Can we just do that, please? I don't know what's going on in there, right? But it turns out we're hardwired for this, right? Have you guys heard about these mirror neurons that we all have? There's this phenomenon that they've discovered a while ago, that there's these neurons in our brain. And they're the things that allow us to experience what someone else is experiencing, right? It's sort of the phenomenon, like, I think that's why we love sports so much. Well, I love sports so much. I'm a sports fanatic. I'm unapologetic about it. And when I'm watching sports, like, I'm right there with them, right? It's as if I'm scoring a touchdown, or as if I'm hitting the home run. Like, I'm living vicariously through these athletes. I totally get that. But the reason why I love it so much is because there's actually something going on with me that is experiencing what those players are experiencing, right? It's what allows us to do that. And that's a good thing, right? It's what has allowed our species to evolve. Brene Brown talks about this. Does everyone know Brene Brown? She's like the new Oprah. She's huge now. She's this sociologist that has done a lot of research around connection and shame and leadership. Her most recent one is called Daring Greatly, her most recent book. And she uses a different word. She uses the word empathy for compassion, but she made, there's this video that I found on YouTube where they took one of her talks and someone did some animation over it. So I wanted to share that with you because I think it's a great illustration.
So what is empathy? And why is it very different than sympathy? Empathy fuels connection. Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy, it's very interesting. Teresa Wiseman is a nursing scholar who studied professions, very diverse professions, where empathy is relevant, and came up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, the ability to take the perspective of another person or recognize their perspective as their truth. Staying out of judgment. Not easy when you enjoy it as much as most of us do. Recognizing emotion in other people and then communicating that. Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, and climb down. I know what it's like down here, and you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No, you want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time. Because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful, and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So, I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
So good, right? Yeah, you can give her some applause. I mean, I love that last line, and I want to say it again. It's rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection, right? I mean, I get that often in our responses of maybe pity, in our responses in silver lining a situation, in our responses of trying to change the subject, maybe when someone's experiencing something difficult, it's often being motivated from a place of goodness, right? Like we're trying to make it better, right? Like any other fixers out there that just want to respond and fix everything. Like I don't want to list, like, you've told me enough, like how can I make it better? I want to fix it, right? But ironically, even if we don't know what to say, the best thing we can say is, whew, I don't even know what to say right now. But I'm so glad you've shared that with me, right? And I think we've experienced this within spiritual communities. I've experienced this within support groups and small groups and some men's work that I've done together. It's this really interesting phenomenon because we all get together, and in my men's group, you know, we're a bunch of dudes and we get around a circle and we just talk about stuff that we don't want to talk about. Stuff we may be feeling shame around, stuff that we're struggling with, stuff that it's hard for me to talk about. But within this context where we're all just sharing, somehow it's a beautiful practice. And there's no crosstalk, there's no advice giving, there's no trying to fix and make it better, which is hard for a bunch of dudes sitting in a circle, I recognize. Which is why it's a spiritual practice. But just in that circle, there's so much healing that gets to happen. And I think it has something to do with this. Because what we recognize is real compassion is real connection. And all we're doing there in those circles is just experiencing a connection with each other. Through just being present, through listening, through being in this field of oneness that we like to talk about as a theory, but that we actually get to experience as a reality in some of these spaces. And I know this happens in classes. Guarantee it's going to happen in that spiritual practice class. And there's something so deeply healing about that. And it's nothing like, this is not rocket science. This is just simple being humanness, right? And so there's some practices that we can get into and really work on where we're actually cultivating compassion, right? The Buddhists have a practice of just like me, where we practice recognizing that every single person that we come in contact with is going through the same things that we are internally, right? And there's this resonance practice that's actually more dialogue focused, where we're listening, but we're listening with our heart. And when we're listening with someone, we're not trying to figure out how we're going to respond. We're not trying to hang on to every word. We're just paying attention to the moments where we're feeling resonance with that person and then reflecting that back to them. And these practices help us to experience that connection, right? Because when we're attuning to those times when we're really with someone, when they're sharing something with us, we're experiencing that real connection. We're experiencing that real compassion. And so in my workshop this afternoon, we'll start out a little bit in practicing some of these compassion spiritual practices that help us to experience this resonance, right? Because it's something that I think we kind of know how to do, but we're not in the practice of all the time. But what I know and recognize is just after doing it a few times and after just bringing a little bit of conscious awareness to it, we can become more aware of this connection that's happening all the time. And then we can begin to experience this real compassion and this real connection that is always available. Like, it is always truly available, right? And so when we talk about, like, in this context of I care for the poor, right? I love what Dr. Holmes says here. He says, compassion and caring are the ties that bind us together in mutual understanding and in the unified attempt to uncover the divinity in each other. Even this term, the poor, right, I actually struggled with when I was looking at this month. Because I know that the poor, like, brings with it automatically lots of labels and stigmas around a group of people that happen to be in a different socioeconomic class, right? Or that are in a particular socioeconomic class that could be your own as well. And I know that, like, all of these are automatic, and all of these stigmas and all of these unconscious biases just come when I see the word the poor. And often in churches, we love to do these charity events, food drives, and school supply drives, and you know, giving things to folks that may have less than we do. And we feel really good about that. Let's be real. Like, that's a good thing to do in your community. It has an impact, and it feels really good. But if we're not pairing that work, that charity work, with this kind of understanding, we're sort of perpetuating this power dynamic that exists already. And we're not doing anything to really enter into this from a spiritual point of view, of actually seeking to discover the divinity in each and every person, right? And so the way that we can do that, when you think about the work that we're doing out in the community, is this thing called proximity. Brian Stevenson is this guy that has worked with folks. He's a lawyer that he's worked with folks on death row. This guy was on Oprah, so he sold a ton of books after that. He wrote this book, Just Mercy, about his experience. And this is what he says. He says, when you get close to something that's meaningful for you, it changes you. We all have to find ways to get closer to the things that we care about, right? So what he's saying there is that through getting close to whatever it happens to be, whatever issue that we happen to be thinking about, passionate about, by getting close to the folks that we're seeking to serve, by getting close to the communities that we seek to be more a part of from a diversity and inclusion perspective, we're fundamentally changed by those relationships. And what's happening there is we're experiencing a connection. So we recognize that not only is there divinity within this person, but I have so much to gain from this interaction. And where I thought I was the person with the power going in and giving something to this person, wow, like, this interaction is giving, like, so much to me. And then we can begin to work from a just perspective where we're not the ones, the people in power that are making all the decisions and how everything can change. But all we're doing is simply being in community with those that we're seeking to bring into our circle of belonging. Because let's be real, this is all about belonging. This is all about community. This is all about connection. This is all about experiencing the oneness that exists all the time. And breaking down all of the barriers and all of the weird things that we do to ourselves and to each other to separate us in both conscious and unconscious ways. And I would say most of this stuff is very unconscious, right? We've all been socialized in the same way. And most of us, we don't even know it. And so from that place, right, we can come into this question of what's mine to do, right? You know, the Buddhists are big on compassion. there's actually a whole sect of Tibetan Buddhism called Mahayana, the second turning of the wheel. It was a sect of Buddhism that came later after the early Buddhist sects. And they are the ones that take this bodhisattva vow, right? And the bodhisattva vow is someone who has taken the vow, and they believe in reincarnation, to come back again and again and again until all sentient beings have attained enlightenment, right? which is pretty intense. Like, there's probably some other places in this whole realm of consciousness that you can go to, and they're choosing to come back to this crazy, weird earth plane over and over and trying to wait till all of us become enlightened. Like, you guys are going to be here for a while, probably. But it's a beautiful vow, and it's not really driven out of this sort of feeling like this is what we have to do. It comes from this understanding that we're all interconnected, that there actually isn't enlightenment for oneself. That doesn't exist. There's no enlightenment for one unless there's enlightenment for all. There's no liberation of suffering for one that there's not liberation of suffering for all. We're actually that deeply connected. So of course we're going to come again and again and again, because this is who we are. Like, their understanding of oneness and interconnection is that deep, right? And so, you know, when we're looking at what's mine to do, when I was entering ministerial school, you know, I had grown up in this teaching, and I got really good about thinking about myself and trying just to manifest my best life, like just live my best life, manifest all that I can, right? And I started getting to ministerial school, and I recognized, like, I was really influenced by Buddhism. I recognized, like, that I, like, only focusing on myself had this inherent limit to it, right? And that my spiritual path could only go so far if that's what I was focusing on, right? And so I love what this church is up to. And I get that it may, like, ruffle some feathers on the way. Like, why are we thinking about the world? Like, why aren't we just thinking about our own spiritual path? And I totally get that. They're inherently connected, though, right? Like, our own spiritual awakening and our own spiritual freedom is inherently connected with the awakening and the spiritual freedom of all of us. And so what ours is to do is just to tune into those particular ways that the world is moving us, right? And find those things that we seek to move close to, and then be bold enough and brave enough to also discover the unique ways that we're being called to be a part of that awakening. What unique skills do we have? Why are we here? Why did we incarnate this time around? Maybe we're all bodhisattvas and we don't know it. And once we can find those places where we can tune in and say, God, this issue just is really moving me. Like, I have a real deep connection to that. And, oh, wow, I have these particular aspects that I'm being called to express in the world, and we bring those together. Like, that's where calling is. That's where purpose is. That's the place where we discover a deeper understanding of why we're here, and our spirituality can reach even new levels and new heights, right? You may have seen this quote by Frederick Buechner. I love it so much. It says, the place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. You can take a picture of that. Okay. Take it home. And this is going to be a big part of the workshop, right? That we do this afternoon is we're gonna discover sort of these two aspects. I'm not gonna give you all the answers in 2 hours about your purpose in life. Well, maybe I will. I don't wanna discount that. That's worth $25. But we're really gonna do some work around, like, what is my deep gladness? How am I being called to express in the world? And then how does that pair with What are the things that are really moving me, are really calling to me? And then how can we bring those together in a way that is grounded in spiritual practice, that rooted in that can allow us and inform us in how to take action in the world? That's really why we're here. I think, anyways, we're all seeking to discover this. And so we're just going to do a few exercises to move more deeply into that. And so what I want to end with is this idea that as we begin engaging in the world, that we stay attuned to this idea of being for something and against no one. I actually changed this a little bit. Ernest Holmes said, for something and against nothing. Sometimes I feel like there's some things I can be against, right? I can be against racism. I can be against homophobia. I can be against bigotry. That feels okay to me, actually. But to be against a person, no, that's no. I know we're living in a time where it's really easy, like all of our leaders are really showing us how to be polarized. Like all of our leaders is like, this is how you lead. You just hate whoever doesn't agree with you. And you drive them into the ground, into submission, right? And I think we're discovering like how that process is kind of annoying and doesn't work. At least I am. I'm like, this is so juvenile. What are we doing? But I also recognize it's really easy to do, because any time that I feel threatened, any time I feel cognitive dissonance because someone doesn't agree with me and something, especially with things that I really deeply care about, I feel like I have to defend, I feel like I have to fight back, or I feel like I have to shy away, right? That whole flight or fight thing happens. So I get it. I get that this is how I react. Yet the spiritual work in that is recognizing that there's something deeper in us that is wishing to express, and that the world isn't against us. It's against who we're not, right? It's not against who we are, it's against who we're not. And all of these experiences that we're having are actually an opportunity to more fully express the ways that we're being called to be in the world. So there's always opportunity for us to more deeply express courage, to more deeply express love, to more deeply express compassion, and to do so from a place that knows who we are and knows why we're here and has connection to those inner resources that are coming out when we're connected to that place, which is the place of the divine, which is the place of God within, right? And so the last part of my workshop, we're going to do a little bit of that work, right? To know that we can be for something and against no one. And no one actually has to be our enemy. But we have to do the work so that when we're feeling threatened and we want to fight or flight, that we recognize what's going on within and that we can express in the way that we're being called to express in the world uniquely as us. And all of us will have a different little flavor on what's being called forth from us. But this is foundational work, right? If we're seeking to make a difference in the world, we also have to have these inner tools when we're bumping up against folks that may not agree with us. And we all don't need to agree with each other, let's be real. But we have to let everybody's personhood, everybody's divinity stay intact. So I want to end with this quote by Gary Simmons, who is the author of this book. He's a Unity minister. This is a really amazing book. A lot of the work that we're doing in my workshop comes from Gary Simmons' work. And this is what he says, and I just think it's so brilliant. He says, we want to make sure there's alignment between the sacred yes that I am putting my attention on, so that it's big enough to contain a vision in which everyone gets to be whole. It's deep. You can take a picture of that one too. And just chew on it for the next 3 weeks. Because what he's saying here, right, is like, if we're really stepping into that calling, if we're really stepping into that purpose, if we're really starting to put a focus on that big vision for our lives, it has to be great enough so that each and every person that comes in contact with us as we're living out that vision also gets to behold the wholeness of every single person, gets to stay intact no matter what side of the aisle they're on, no matter what neighborhood they live in, no matter what socioeconomic class they happen to be inhabiting at that time, no matter what. And that's the spiritual work, that we begin to even widen our circles of belonging so that our enemies get to be a part of our spiritual circles as well. And to know they too are our teachers and they too are our friends. And that we all get to be in this place together where we don't have to agree, but our wholeness still gets to be. So I invite us all just to take a deep breath and close our eyes if it feels comfortable. And as we breathe out and we breathe into this space, we're also breathing into this awareness of our deep connection to it all. And our deep connection to the One. To that one life, that one presence, that one power that is living and moving and having its being through all of life. And we recognize that every opportunity to experience that deeper connection and that deep compassion is actually a step along the spiritual path. And that we can awaken to that each and every moment and know that, like, as our heart opens, so too does our mind and our awareness and our ability to experience this thing we're coming to know more deeply as the divine, as us, with us, through us, around us, and between us. And we can give thanks for this thing called life because we have been brought here for a purpose. And I think we all sense that. I know that we all sense what that purpose is. And so what I know for each and every person in this room is that we are all bodhisattvas. That we are all here on this planet and we all have a role in the healing that is just being called forth at this time. And so I know that we give ourselves to that. We give ourselves to that great call. We give ourselves to that deep purpose. We give ourselves to the divine in a way that allows us all to be whole and allows us all to be one. And so we just let this resonate as we go forth and we feel that resonance between us as we move about our day. And we let that smile that just comes knowing that the joy of life itself is always here. And so we just let this all be and release it into the law of the universe, knowing that it's already done. And we let it be so. And together we can say, and so it is. Thanks. Thank you.
It is now time for our practice of circulations. Will the ushers please stand? And as you hold your gift in your hand, please repeat after me. I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It returns to me multiplied abundantly. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gifts.